Welcome, everyone, to The Deep Dive, your gateway into the maze of the American justice system. I'm Lynn Pride Richardson, Chief Public Defender for Dallas County, and your host on this fascinating and revealing, yet illuminating journey. Join us as we peel back the layers, uncovering the realities and advocating for reform. Our team, composed of dedicated lawyers, investigators, social workers, and advocates, is committed to providing unwavering support to every client, focusing on holistic, client-centered representation. From unraveling systemic flaws to ensuring there is fairness and justice for all, we're here to expose, educate, and empower. Together, we dive deep into the heart of the matter, addressing the failures and striving for change. Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome to The Deep Dive, a Dallas County Public Defender podcast. Really, really excited to introduce my special, special guest, Becky White. Becky is an Austin area mom who lost her son, Cameron, at the age of 19 to fentanyl poisoning. Fentanyl is the number one killer of Americans under the age of 50. It is a highly potent synthetic opiate that is at least 50 times more potent than heroin. Just 2 milligrams, equal to about 10, 15 grams of table salt, is enough to kill a person. Overdoses attributed to opiates have skyrocketed across the country. Becky has taken the pain of losing her son and has turned it into a passion for raising awareness about the dangers of fentanyl through her nonprofit organization, A Change for CAM, in hopes that no other family will ever have to experience the same devastating loss. Becky's journey has taken her to DEA headquarters in our nation's capital, as well as to schools, communities, and organizations across the state of Texas in an effort to save lives. Welcome, Becky, to The Deep Dive. While we know that we will all experience loss during some point in our lives, when it occurs, we don't even know how to feel, much less how to even talk about it. And when it's your child, I can't even imagine how you're able to discuss something this horrible. I can't imagine even gathering the strength, the energy, or the courage to even talk about such a devastating loss. How are you able to do this and to keep it all together?
Well, number one, I don't always keep it all together. losing a child, you know, when you have children and you're raising them, you always say a parent's worst nightmare is receiving that phone call or that knock on the door, and you're not sure how you could continue on if that were to happen. And when it does happen to you, you find out a lot of things about yourself and resiliency or just your direction in life going forward. I mean, it knocks you to the ground. But you have to pick yourself back up and move forward. And first and foremost, God is always there with me. And I don't know how I would have done it without God in my life and without a personal relationship with Him. To keep going on a daily basis is healing for me, because I know I'm honoring Cameron. I'm still telling his story. His legacy is still living on. I used to always tell him, you're going to have a heck of a story to tell one day, Cameron. And that story is still being told. It's just not through him.
Let's tell our listeners a little bit about yourself. Where Sure. did you come from? How did you end up in Austin, Texas? Tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. Well, from the beginning, I was born in San Antonio, so I am a true Texan.
You're a true Texan, yes.
But when I was 8 months old, my parents didn't ask my permission, and they moved me to Indiana with, of course, the family, but my dad got transferred there. So I grew up in Indiana, and then when I graduated high school, I actually went to college in West Texas at Angelo State. Okay. And from there, I worked for a little bit and then moved to Austin for a job and have been in the Austin area ever since. So.
Well, tell us a little bit about Cameron, the person, the boy, the little boy who grew up. Tell us, so often when things like this happen, we become focused on the experience surrounding around that person. we really want to be able to say, who was that special boy, yeah. Cameron?
Cameron, truly to this day, was the funniest kid I've ever known. He could literally turn any situation into a laughing matter. And it was a disservice to me when I'm trying to parent him when it ends up being a laughing matter because I didn't accomplish what I was trying to. But he was just the cutest thing ever and knew how to make the faces right back at you and could just get out of the situation. But, you know, through the years, I mean, he was an extremely talented athlete. He was very smart. He's charismatic. And he could walk into the room and lift the mood of everyone in that room without saying a word. He just had that presence about him. 6'4", 184 pounds, so tall and thin, and loose curls on the top of his head that to this day I still have that vision of him walking in my front door and just stopping there and nodding his head and going, sup, and seeing his curls, you know. But, you know, he was just like every other kid in America. He struggled. And was embarrassed by his struggles and had a family that loved and adored him unconditionally. He had an amazing home life. He went to church. He went to a private Christian school, kindergarten through 11th grade. So he knew the difference between right and wrong. He knew who Jesus was and just ended up going down a different path.
You know, I thought about this last night, as a matter of fact, that we can look at our experiences as kids growing up or young adults. You never want to think that, first of all, we have to make a point that this could happen to any family, to any kid. You know, sometimes I think people have this unrealistic idea that it's only those kids that come from broken homes, you know, or dealing with some other struggles, but it could happen to any of us. And we think about our kids, and any parent can tell you this. You try to tell your child to do the right thing, to avoid certain things, but if we remember when we were kids, we didn't like listening to our parents as well. And you also take into consideration it's a different environment that we're living in. We have social media, and we're going to talk a little bit about that as well. And kids are dealing with so many different issues that it is not unusual for a good kid like Cam, coming from a good home, coming from good parents, to end up in a situation like this. Tell us, you talked about that he started to have some issues. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So Cameron was actually diagnosed with depression and anxiety. Not to mention all the stressors that are added onto kids these days, and then add COVID to the mix. And unfortunately, Cameron, instead of going down a healthy coping path, he decided to go down a path of experimenting with substances. And that path, it started out with something that sadly is so normalized these days, of marijuana. And eventually that didn't give him that feeling of normalcy anymore. And so he started experimenting with other substances and purchasing them illicitly. And, you know, he knew how to cope healthily because in a healthy way because we had him going to a counselor prior to turning 18. But when he turned 18, he figured he knew he could take charge of his own path. So that's the huge stigma attached to, number one, mental health issues, and number two, substance use disorders.
Because absolutely.
Those stigmas cause judgment, cause shame. Cameron was super embarrassed and ashamed that he had depression and anxiety. And no outsider looking in would ever know that kid struggled a day in his life, ever.
So he was able to mask that.
He masked it with his humor and his charm. And in this world that I'm in right now of grieving families, all the stories are so similar. A lot of depression and anxiety, a lot of that embarrassment. And on the flip side of that, families that turn their head and say, not my child, my child doesn't do drugs. We're not talking only those who do struggle with substances. I know plenty of parents who have lost kids from going out experimenting for the first time ever. just wanting to have a good time. It's such a different drug landscape than when we were younger. We were able to learn from our mistakes, and kids are dying from their mistakes these days, and that shouldn't be the case. You know, they should be able to have fun and enjoy it and then go, oops, that was dumb.
The other issue, too, since here in the criminal justice system, we see so many people who are suffering from mental health issues. Some serious is bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, and then you have so many dealing with anxiety and depression. And a lot of times, a lot of people get involved in using illicit drugs because they're self-medicating. Even if they've been prescribed medication, the prescribed medication has a lot of side effects. And so I've had clients all the time say that smoking marijuana makes them feel better, but makes them feel calmer. So that is certainly something that, you know, people need to look out for. For those parents and folk that are listening to this podcast, what are some of the signs that a parent should look for to figure out, number one, if your child is struggling with anxiety or depression, and what are the signs that maybe they are using drugs?
So a big thing, and I'm going to speak from my experience with Cameron, a big thing with Cameron was with withdrawing from friends and spending a lot of time in his room alone, not really wanting to do things with family. He showed true signs of depression because he was just, even in his body language, you could just see it. But you could also see grades declining. You could see outbursts of anger or just easily agitated. Those are some big signs. And to be aware of those signs, number one, and then an instant change for the better would be a true sign of potential substance use. If they're all of a sudden feeling better, it's like, what'd you do to all of a sudden just turn things around, you know, without holistically looking at as a big picture of what can we do to fix this issue? So I would say look for those signs for sure. Open communication with your children is so important. A lot of times parents might ask their kids, hey, are you doing okay today? Yeah. And that's the end of the conversation. Don't ask a yes or no question. Leave an open-ended question out there so they have to actually think of a response instead of just a yes or a no. Give your kids permission to talk to their friends' parents. A lot of times it's not easy to talk to your parents about things that are uncomfortable, and parents sometimes shame their kids to where they end up going, okay, fine, I'm just not going to have those conversations anymore. You got to be okay with not shaming them as a parent too, right? Just saying, you know, I experienced that as a kid too. Let's talk through that. Let's talk through how I felt at that time and what I did. Just give them experiences. They're trying to figure out a way in life that it's a rough world out there, and turn to that easy fix of those illicit substances or other directions.
But even realistically speaking, you can do all the right things as a parent.
Absolutely.
And it sounds like you guys did that. Okay, you took them to counseling. And it still doesn't help because those outside factors are so powerful. So you started a group. I guess a bunch of women got together and you decided. Tell us a little bit about your group and the organization that brings you here today.
Yeah, so those are kind of two separate things. Sadly, I met some moms shortly after Cam died, about 6 months, and then five months afterwards and 6 months after Cam died, who had lost their children as well to fentanyl poisoning. And so we started just kind of coming together, and it was so comforting to be among those that knew what we were feeling, even when we didn't have to say a word. So we just started coming together and spending time together and grieving together and doing outreach events together. And so there was an idea to, there's so many of us, let's just start a group and we can start inviting them to events. And
how did you meet these women?
Actually, the first one I met was at a presentation I did about 5 months, no, it was a year after Cameron died, I believe. Time-wise, it doesn't matter. It was at an event that I had done. It was a panel presentation, and she came up to me afterwards and said she lost her son, and so we started talking. And I met the actually first, sorry, backtrack. I met the first one before her son died. She reached out to me after Cameron died because her son was struggling. And we met for dinner one night and talked about what she could do to help her son, Tucker. And sadly, 6 months after Cameron passed, he passed as well at the hands of the same dealer of Cameron. So we started that group. And Carrie Lou Bell is a dear friend of mine who came up to me at that event. She's the one who's kind of just been the instigator of a collector of grieving families, if for lack of a better term. But back then we started with about 8 grieving families, and today we're up to 120.
Oh,
and I've said this so many times before, I love every single one of those families and the parents and even the extended families, but I wish I'd never met any of them.
Yes, absolutely. You know, earlier mentioned how difficult that this is for any parent to go through the loss of a child for any reason whatsoever, but especially under these circumstances. Who was there to support you, or what do you suggest to others, friends or family members of individuals who are going through this loss? What can they do to help the ones that are left behind?
Yeah. From those who have had the loss, don't be afraid to reach out. There are so many groups out there right now that will welcome you with open arms, and that support is invaluable. I just can't describe that close knit feeling you have when you're among those who have experienced what you have. And I would also encourage them to grieve in their own way. Don't let anybody tell you how to grieve, or that, you know, pretty quickly after Cameron died, it felt like the world kept going on. And I'm like, wait, I just lost my kid. This, why is everyone still continuing as normal? You know, and you have to cope with that to begin with, and then find your way of grieving. Mine is speaking out. I created a change for Cam to honor my child and bring awareness so that families don't have to go through what I'm going through. But others don't like speaking, and that's not their way that they're gonna, you know, have some healing brought to them. It could be just having groups of others like them to hang out with or to coordinate events with. It could be just standing at a booth at an event. Could be graphic design to help those of us who don't know how to do graphic design. I mean, there are so many ways, and sometimes they choose to not do any of those things, but that relationship with others is super important, not to isolate and to feel like you're all alone.
I'm sitting here in amazement that you were out speaking a year after Cameron's death. And I'm thinking, I don't know that I could have done it that quickly, but you talked about your faith. Did that help in this instance?
Oh, 100%. 100%. And it was, my first presentation was about 8 months after Cameron passed away. And I knew within a couple of months that I needed to do something, but I didn't know what that was. And I came across this invitation to how to get fake pill education in your schools from an organization called Song for Charlie out of California. And I attended that webinar. And afterwards, I reached out to the coordinators of that, and we had a meeting separately to walk through things. And it kind of encouraged me to start small and get some small wins in there. So I reached out to the kids' private school and started those conversations. And once I had a couple of presentations under my belt, I'm like, I can talk. I give presentations for my work, my full-time job. And so I'm not afraid to speak. And when I'm so passionate about something, it comes easily for me. And it just, every time I speak, it gives me healing.
Well, the speaking is important. I don't think a lot of people, a lot of parents, realize how big a problem this is. And you talk about the number of women that are part of your group and the numbers. It's staggering. And that's something that I have seen over the years, that a lot of people say, that's not going to happen to me. How could that possibly happen? you know, in my family, in my household. And they don't realize how many people are being affected, especially by something like fentanyl. Now, you mentioned earlier about the person that sold Cameron the drugs. Tell us a little bit about that. I did a little reading about him, and I saw this shocking post that said that he posted Cameron's funeral, and then right behind that, he posted, hey, I've got pills to sell. Whatever happened to him? Did he ever get held accountable? Was he ever arrested or charged with Cam's death?
Answer to that is yes. Actually, to all those questions is yes. He did. He was at Cameron's funeral. I didn't know him at the time, but shortly after we kind of pinpointed who he was and knew his name. But we saw a post where he posted from Cameron's funeral and said, RIP, we lost a good one. And then the very next post was a handful of pills for sale. So number one, that tells me he couldn't care less about killing my child. He just cared about how he had the good stuff that was good enough to kill someone, so come get it. And that's what these drug dealers don't care that they're killing people. It's the cost of doing business. And when they do kill someone, you would think people go, oh no, I've got to stay away from that one. He had somebody that he killed somebody with it, but they're going, oh my gosh, I've got to get my hands on that. That's the good stuff. That's the messed up piece of that world. They're seeking that stuff that could potentially not intentionally wanting to kill themselves, but to get a greater high from it. And so the second part of that, yes, he was arrested in April of 22. Is that right? I'm trying to think. 22, April of 22, with distribution of illicit substance, and had some other charges in there. And then during that time, so Tucker, my friend Stephanie's son, also died at the hands of the same dealer. And he was then arrested April after Tucker died. Well, the investigation went on, and they were able to get enough evidence at a federal level. He was arrested on federal charges, not just state charges. So, they purposely did that because they had been on him for quite some time, but needed to get a certain amount of buys and a certain amount of pills. Sadly, Tucker bought pills from him to aid the law enforcement, and he had a weak moment and took that pill, and he died. But anyway, they had enough evidence to charge him at a federal level, so they arrested him, and then they do have enough to pin Tucker's death on him. So he was charged with distribution causing death for Tucker. Now, he wasn't charged with Cameron's death, but they did use Cameron's evidence in his sentencing because of it wouldn't have stuck at a level, because Cameron's death was what started the investigation into him. And so they didn't have the phone pings that they needed and the social media evidence that they needed. And but he was just sentenced on February 9th of this year to 13 years in prison.
Only 13.
Only 13, and that's, it sounds like only, but he took a plea deal. So when he was charged, he was facing 20 to life. So we're thinking, okay, at least 20, but then he took a plea deal. And he was going to give up, you know, other higher up dealers.
Okay, that
he did plead to that. But during the sentencing, it was very apparent that the judge, he said he begrudgingly is awarding this 13-year sentence, because had he not taken a plea deal, he would have given him the maximum. Because of his lack of remorse. And after Cameron died, the posts that he made and the cash that he's flaunting, and then Tucker's death, and even after Tucker's death, he continued to sell. He knew he was killing his friends and continued to do what he was doing. And there were some other reports of people who said, I overdosed from drugs that he sold me, but they were able to revive them with Narcan. So his lack of remorse and mind you, we're not talking your typical go to the bad part of town looking for someone on the street corner to get drugs from. He was 18 years old when he sold to Cameron. He was a high school in the local area. He went to a high school in the local area there. These are kids selling to kids. P- peers selling to peers. Some are doing it to, yes, basically make a career out of it. Some are just doing it to support their habit. And some are just innocently handing a pill to a friend going, I took one of these last night. It made me feel great. And they're killing their friends. But just because you're like, I didn't mean to, I didn't know I had it in there, you're still going to get in trouble for it. So the flip side of that is don't take them and don't sell them, because what you're selling has poison in it. And Cameron took one pill that he thought was a Valium, and it contained a lethal dose of fentanyl.
And I think that's important for our listeners to hear also. It's that people sometimes think they're taking another kind of medication, maybe for pain reduction or something of that nature, and you have no idea whether or not fentanyl is on that, and that can mean the loss of your life if you
right.
do that. Yes.
That's the majority of who are dying these days, you know. And it's a lose-lose situation regarding the dealer as well. I mean, he's going away for 13 years. His mom pleaded for him to be able to get out. I mean, it's just gut-wrenching all the way around. And I had the opportunity to address him at that hearing. And during that, I offered, when he gets out, I offered to help him make a positive out of what he has experienced. Because I feel like, you know, yeah, they're hearing from a grieving mom. They might be hearing from mental health experts. They might be, but someone who had actually killed people and reformed themselves, hopefully, if he gets out, and he's a smart kid, he could get out and do good. So if he could turn his story into something that could actually save lives and redeem himself of that, you know. And the night before that hearing, my husband asked me, he said, are you going to forgive him tomorrow? And I went, no. And then I thought, well, it's not because I don't. It's just I'm not going to say that publicly. And then as I couldn't sleep that night, I'm like, okay, well, am I supposed to forgive him? And I didn't type anything. I had my written statement. And the whole time I was reading my statement, I was just like, okay, God, if I'm supposed to forgive him, you need to provide the words. You need to provide the timing. And at the end of that statement, I said, and finally, my husband asked me last night if I was going to forgive you, and my instant response was no. I said, but then I realized that the only person that I'm harming is myself, so I forgive you.
I'm sitting here, and I have so much respect for you. I don't know that I could do the same. I think your faith is really important, the support of your husband. And I do think it makes a difference when somebody who has been responsible for this changes and speaks out to others. But that's hard for a mom. So I admire you immensely.
Right.
So what would you like for our listeners to take away from this? You've talked about a lot of things. I know that's a big ask for you.
Number one, never, never say not my child. And you know, even if you have grown adult children, they're not immune. Fentanyl does not discriminate. You think somebody who's my friend Carrie Lou, who lost her 44-year-old son, you'd think he, you know, people say, well, he should have known better. He thought he was getting something that he didn't get. He purchased something that he thought was going to help him relieve himself of his anxiety. So it doesn't matter the age, but kids especially think they're invincible. Cameron knew about fentanyl. He knew it was dangerous, and he knew to stay away from it. But he thought he was invincible, and I'm sure whoever sold it to him told him it was safe, and there's no way to tell if these pills are safe. So do your research. Know what's out there. Know how to talk to your kids. Start those conversations, and it's not just a one-and-done conversation. It needs to be continued conversations. Even if your kid's rolling your eyes at them, you've got to be able to get to a point where it can be an everyday conversation.
And you almost want to tell people that they need to go out and get some Narcan, you know?
Absolutely.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about Narcan and what that does?
Narcan is the antagonist to an opioid overdose. And so we all have receptors in our brain where those opioids go into. And if someone is overdosing and Narcan is administered, and I say Narcan, that's a brand of naloxone. But if they're administered that, it could potentially revive them and cover those receptors and not allow those opioids to go back into those receptors. But it always, in those circumstances, call 911, because opioids last longer than Narcan does, so they could go back into that unresponsive state. And that doesn't mean carry Narcan because you think your kids are going to go into that state. It's, you could be walking through the parking lot of Walmart and come across somebody unresponsive. And sadly, we are more likely to come across someone these days than ever that that's just unresponsive. And if you don't know what's going on with them, it's still okay to administer Narcan because it's like shooting saline in their nose. It's sold over the counter now. You can get it on Amazon. I highly recommend just carrying it in your car, because if you never need it, awesome. But if you do, you have it and could potentially save a life.
If there's somebody out there listening that is struggling with this or is concerned and they want more information, is there a way they can get in contact with you?
Sure. They can go to our website, changeforcam.org, or they can reach out to me directly at my email address. It's changeforcam@gmail.com. And any of those ways they can get in contact with me, I'm happy to help.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Deep Dive and for joining us throughout this incredible season. We truly appreciate your support and engagement. This season, we discussed a variety of topics, from the significance of problem-solving courts to navigating mental health resources. Your feedback and encouragement have been invaluable. If you enjoyed this season, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts and leaving us a review. This will help us improve and reach more listeners like you. We're gearing up for our next season, where we will be diving into topics that are affecting citizens right now. Stay tuned for more exciting and insightful content. In the meantime, we'd love to hear your thoughts and questions about this season. Feel free to connect with us on Instagram at Dallas Public Defenders or Facebook at Dallas County Public Defender's Office. Thank you again for being a part of our podcast community. Until next season, this is Interim Chief Public Defender Paul Blocker, and you've been listening to The Deep Dive. Stay tuned and catch